Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. The views of our guests and, this evening, why we have with us Bill Sardi, who's a health journalist and certainly a good supporter of Radio Liberty. And we're going to be talking about what I think is on the mind of most of our listeners tonight, and that is the tragedy in Louisiana and in Mississippi. And this is so difficult to address objectively because we're so emotionally involved, and we watch the television and we see the faces of the suffering people, and we hear about people shooting at helicopters, and we hear about people dying and corpses around. And I think that to begin with, I'd like to comment on what I've learned from reading so much of the material that I've been getting this last day or two, and a great deal of the material that Bill has sent. First of all, there are two issues. One is the effect, direct effect of the hurricane as it hit the coast of Mississippi, and the Gulf Coast there is just wiped out. I've talked to people from there today, and Colonel Tom McKinney, frequent guest on Radio Liberty, his home is gone, his son's home is gone. His daughter's home is gone. Another daughter's home is pretty well damaged. There's rubble as far as you can see, going a mile or so in from the coast, and they have no idea how many people have died. The area is under martial law. You can't get into that area. The roads are sealed off, and many of the roads are actually, bridges are out. It's difficult getting food and supplies in. This is a major catastrophe. Almost a 40-foot wall of water washed on shore and just, of course, tore everything out. Basically a giant tsunami. But you're not hearing about this. The other is what happened in New Orleans. And here you had a situation where you had a tremendous rainstorm that didn't have the full brunt of the hurricane. The rainstorm passed, the streets were drying, and then suddenly the levees began to give way in several places, not one, but in several places, and begins to flood the city. So the question is, and we're going to, I think Bill really wants to talk about, well, I'll sort of let him talk about this issue. We have two issues. One is the tremendous force of the hurricane, and then, of course, we have almost a man-made disaster in New Orleans where everything that possibly could be done was done wrong. And with that as a background, Bill, you pick up the story.
Wants to sort this out, all of God's people, certainly caring for everyone who's there in the middle of this tragedy. And, of course, the sad part of it all is it's too soon to say this, and then it must be said that they already knew what they were facing if such an event would occur. They already knew that there would be 100,000 people dead and that there would be 1.6 million people in flight, and that they couldn't get them all out of the area. They already knew that New Orleans is in a geographical bowl. It is lower than Lake Pontchartrain, than the ocean and the levees and the Mississippi River on all sides. So the only way that New Orleans actually exists every day is it has 22 pumps to pump the water out. And otherwise it would flood automatically, and of course the hurricane would force water in. One of the escape valves or relief valves are the wetlands that are nearby, and of course they absorb up and soak up the water and give a little bit more relief. The water has to rise higher to get into the city. Those wetlands were converted in the last couple of years by the Bush administration and given over to developers, so that this brought criticism upon Bush for not leaving that there as some sort of safety valve in the event of a hurricane. Also in the year 2001, Scientific American completely outlined what exactly was going to happen. They had a disaster scenario set up. They knew all of this geographically was vulnerable, and they set it up, and it's unfolding just exactly the way it was predicted. The problem was, to fix the problems, they needed $14 billion to fix it. The Bush administration cut the budget to the Army Corps of Engineers by 70-some million dollars and diverted the money to the war in Iraq. This is not a contentious fact. This is actually known, and I'm just delivering it without any politics attached to it. It's just the way it is. So, unfortunately, the Army Corps of Engineers didn't have enough money to manage the whole problem in the first place, but nonetheless, what little money they had was drastically cut, and of course, they couldn't manage this area. So, the Bush administration getting criticism for all of this, but there's plenty of blame to go around, and it really begins, actually, with the events prior to the hurricane. And of course, as I've tried to point out, President Bush was in need of distraction. Cindy Sheehan, the anti-war mother, was camped outside of Bush's Texas vacation home. Gasoline prices were rising. Anger was rising among consumers. The war in Iraq was faltering. American boys were coming home in body bags more often. The public was incensed over immigration laws that weren't enforced. In fact, Joseph Farah of WorldNet Daily and Patrick Buchanan called for his impeachment. And a fresh Gallup poll showed a steep decline in his approval rating of 5 points in just 1 week. And it was his low mark as far as approval went. And, of course, he needed a distraction. He got one. And as we get on in our report tonight, we wonder if that hurricane wasn't a hurricane made to order. So for all everyone listening, why it will be just exactly what I said. Did somehow someone order the forces of nature to show up just on time? And of course, we're going to deliberate that question. But before we go there,
but before we do that, don't you really think that Bush is more or less a figurehead for another force? That, in other words, the people behind Bush are the ones who really make the decisions rather than the president. He may have to bear responsibility for what's done, but in the final analysis, do you really think he makes the decisions or somebody else makes them?
Well, he does seem to be kind of a, well, as we saw it in the last few days, an airline passenger who just makes a flyby. You know, they make these decisions for him. Of course, it made him look worse, like he was an elitist.
Hold that thought right there, Bill, but bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty and trying to make some sense out of really what's going on. And of course, Bill was simply pointing out that the administration is having terrible problems. Certainly, with Cindy Sheehan camped outside the president's Crawford, Texas ranch, and, you know, a lot of publicity coming out of that. And then, of course, the tragic situation as far as what's going on over in Iraq, the rising oil prices, the steadfast refusal of the Bush administration to do anything about immigration, because their real policy has nothing to do with maintaining America's integrity or sovereignty. They're globalists. They're dedicated to the destruction of sovereignty. They're falling support for the Bush administration in the polls. I mean, the approval rating had fallen 5 points in simply in a week. And so at that point, certainly, Bill's point was they needed a diversion. Now, what we're going to hear is Bill's opinion, so go pick the story up there, Bill.
Well, as we go on with the facts here, and we're trying to put them together for the audience, as everyone saw, there was a recommended evacuation announced. Now, that really comes from the local authorities there. Even though FEMA was in place, and so everyone understands, the White House, so that they can't claim that President Bush was inept in any way, on the Thursday night before, I believe was the 28th, he had issued to FEMA a directive of an emergency preparedness to give this gives them the go-ahead to spend the money and to declare this an emergency zone. FEMA was on site. We went through Friday, Saturday, Sunday. By Monday, 6:30, the storm was coming, and then, of course, by later in the day, quite a few hours later after the storm had passed through, then somehow these levees burst. Now, they put everyone on a recommended evacuation. Now, the local authorities and FEMA have the authority to declare a mandatory evacuation. Now, I have in my hand the State of Louisiana Emergency Operations Plan, and it tells you all of these instructions. Now, they could have done this. They didn't make it mandatory. I know everyone is saying, but they could have left. Many people did leave. But they do have in here that there are people that they know that cannot leave. There are people able to leave but have elderly people to care for. There are people that simply didn't have enough gasoline, and so on. And these reasons get added up. If you understand, if you're poor, many of these people, 70% of the blacks in that area living basically in trailer park type of housing.
And, of course, if they left, where would they go?
Well, they had no connections. They didn't have money to go to a hotel or something. So you can understand the fear of leaving to what? And, of course, the question gets to be, now, I have many Christian friends and others getting back to me, and Rush Limbaugh got on the radio immediately and said, this is just a social welfare state out there. They're totally corrupt and incompetent. Well, we certainly know corruptness and incompetence breeds in all kinds of government, and that's probably true. The people in Texas, the governor there, said Louisiana has plenty of wealth, but Texas uses it better, and they had better plans and food and so on. They had these same things. I checked on it. They had water, food, and emergency plans. The problem is, in New Orleans, you can't get in to deliver it, and what was there was submerged underwater and destroyed. So this was an unfair criticism. And, of course, Rush Limbaugh coming to Bush's rescue attempt and trying to say it's not Bush's fault and so on. Well, you know, as we look at this thing, really, there are a lot of people that couldn't leave. They were unable to leave, certainly the people in the hospitals, nursing homes, and elsewhere. And, of course, in their operations guide here, it says there are at-risk parishes. That's the areas they have. They're called parishes. And they'll prepare to activate last resort refuges. Now, what that means is if people can't evacuate, the last resort refuges should be where these people are sent to. Now, they had these already assigned. They don't seem to be able to use them because they're all underwater. And, of course, priority would be given to residents of low-lying areas. That's almost a laugh. The entire city of New Orleans is low-lying and underneath the sea level and underneath all those bodies of water that surround it. So what the problem we get into, and of course, FEMA had 3.5 days to be there. They were there. The problem is that they're the ones, along with the city and other government people, who certainly all they had to do was get the buses there and take these people out of the area. They're blaming the people who have no resource to leave, and then not providing any buses or any pickup places, and all this should have been done before. Now, they have a list of every parish, the number of evacuees, the number of car automobile vehicles in each parish, so they know how much traffic this would create, and if they had put them in buses, they would have got them on the highway without as many cars out there. And they could have done this. I think many people saw a whole yard full of school buses that were completely destroyed in the water there. They could have put those out on the road the 3 days before and gotten many thousands of people out of the area. Helicopters could have brought people out. So they knew that this one area inside of New Orleans was the area of great concern because it is below sea level. Now, all this was known. It was printed and published in Scientific American in the year 2001, including the fact that the escape routes are limited and the fact that how many people would die, about 100,000. I think when you count here, it's going to be right on these numbers, and of course, the number of people they would have to to house and of course clothe and feed and all these kind of things. This is kind of right on the prediction.
But of course they had 3 days then, knowing the hurricane is coming, so they had 3 days of course to start getting the people out. But did they actually help anybody get out, or did they sort of wait and see what was going to happen?
Well, apparently the people were that were left there, you know, when we look at it, Louisiana Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness people sent out a press release on the 28th. Now, the 28th was that Sunday, and of course, it says immense hurricane roars towards New Orleans. Another press release that day said it was 175-mile-an-hour winds that were coming. So they knew this was huge. Now, understand, the president was on vacation. He was coming back and trying to squeeze in two more days. He was landing at Ontario Airport near where I live. F-16 jets in the sky scaring away the little planes in the area with afterburners and flares. It was quite a show in the local area. He then went the next day, Monday, to Coronado, where he was going to give a little speech. It was the, the same day, that, of course, the Japanese had surrendered in World War II. So they're remembering that day, and then, of course, Bush put in a plug for his war in Iraq, and it gave about 15, 20 seconds to tell the people in New Orleans, you won't be able to return your homes. He was totally uninformed. There were no homes. There are 350,000 homes destroyed. They're all underwater. What we're seeing there is not even the worst, because many of the homes we're seeing, the rooftops of two-story homes, a whole lot of them are just sunk and completely gone or washed away. So what he was told there sounded kind of ignorant. And in fact, earlier in the day, they have this photograph of him playing a guitar that had given to him. Now, this was hours before anybody was drowning, but nonetheless, he had signed a directive giving FEMA this emergency preparedness go-ahead. He knew this was bad. Everyone was being told this was bad, and yet he seems to be uninvolved.
Apparently it was on Friday the 26th, according to the material you sent me. So it's on the 26th that he signs a directive mobilizing FEMA. So the 26th, that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So they've got at least 3 days to make the preparations for what's going to happen and get the people out. But what happens?
What happens is, of course, they don't evacuate the people prior to this. And then after this, I had already written FEMA within 24 hours. I was sending emails and faxes to FEMA and said, you must get the people out of there or this thing is going to be an absolute disaster in front of the American people. Anybody could tell you this. I hate to be a done-told-you-so kind of person, but you could see what was happening because I had the emergency preparedness plans here in front of me, and I knew they weren't even following them.
So they had their plans. Was this done by the state or was this done by FEMA?
It's done by both because, as you understand, they work hand in hand, and of course they know what to do. Now, even when Paul Azan had the FEMA director there on television, just yesterday, they were asking him about the people over at the convention center, not where the dome is, but where the convention center was. He said he didn't even have any knowledge till the third day there about people being in the convention center. Where is this man? What is he hired to do? I mean, he's acting like unless somebody gives me a permission slip to look, I don't go there. I don't know what he's talking about. There were 3,000 people in there with no police protection, no food, no water, etc., all those things. And, of course, you saw in the last couple of days a news press that finally became a little confrontive to government like they should have been all along. And, of course, they asked the FEMA director, was it fair to blame the people who couldn't leave? And he punted on that and said, well, no, we have to work on this right now, and we shouldn't be arguing about this, and tried to weasel out of this. But he had, earlier in the day, blamed these people for not leaving. This is how he was going to try to get FEMA off the hook. What people were writing in to ask, and this was a letter that stands out in my mind on CNN, one man asked, how is it that you can show on television that the United States has such technology with great precision it can drop bombs on the specific place it needs to in Baghdad, and it can't drop bottled water in New Orleans? And this was the kind of criticism that was coming out, and I think it's valid criticism.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Bill Sardi, and I think this is something that we have to think about. You know, is our government really that inept? Should we try, really feel, should we depend on our government? Should we have local control with people who will be held responsible? Because believe me, when things go bad with the federal government, nobody's ever held responsible, and people are dying because of it. Well, Bill, go ahead.
Well, certainly as we move on in time here and we see these events unfold, I want everyone to understand that the helicopters that were being used to put the sandbags down into these levees. Now, so everyone understands, there is a lake, and the lake has a canal, and on that canal is a breach going into the city of New Orleans. On the other side of town, there's another breach in a levee. It's an industrial levee. It's almost perfectly staged and done to flood the town, one from each end, and of course, this is how this all gets washed. Understand, we have two disasters. We have a hurricane, and hours later, we have the breaches in the levee. It goes unexplained why the levees breach hours after the hurricane passes, but nonetheless, this is true, and the city government is able to somehow detect that the levees are going to go and decide to pick up their papers and everything and move over to Metairie, which is a little town next door, so they're able to get out of the swath of this thing and somehow know this. Now, I can't blame them in the panic that there wasn't a way to tell everybody this was going to happen, but apparently they had some way of knowing the levee was going to breach and overflow and finally and break. And the question is, this is all a scenario that had all, it's not like this is something new. They already had this in the storm action plans, in the protection plans, unrations. They knew the levees might go. They were rated for a number three severity storm, not of course a grade five severity hurricane. So this is what they knew could happen. Now the question gets to be, what in the world was FEMA doing and these helicopters trying to dump these phony sandbags over into this breach, which is huge? This was all seemed to be kind of like a PR effort. It was worthless. It didn't do anything. And what I'm asking is this. If anybody looked at this and saw it being done, of course, they weren't real good at showing this. But what they did is they kind of took like pallets of these sandbags, and then the helicopters lifted them up and then dumped them down into this breach. Well, of course, what I'm asking is, you could take pallets of bottled water and lay them down gently on the highways and roads and at least make sure that the people in town had access to bottled water. You can get bottled water all over the United States and fly it in there in 24 hours. Why was there no bottled water left for these thousands of people that were roaming around? It goes unexplained. This is unbelievable when you look at it. And, of course, there are other reports here because the people are being asked, well, they can just go 2 miles to this place. You can't go 2 miles when you're 75 years old. You can't walk 2 miles when you've got three children hanging on your side. So these are the kind of problems that you kind of hear. It's like these people are to blame for this kind of thing. And, of course, so a lot of this is because we have emotions inside that we want to protect our president, or we feel that whatever it is unfair criticism and so on. So we have lots of feelings in these things. And, of course, we want to come to the defense of our guy. And, of course, to describe it clearly, Louisiana is, and the mayor there, largely Democratic and so on. This is a poor area, unfortunately described as an area of great social welfare and so on. As a welfare state, it's kind of said negatively.
Hold that thought for just a minute, Bill, as we bring our other stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardian, and it is simply pointing out that the hurricane had fairly well passed, and then sometime many hours after the hurricane has passed, the streets are beginning to dry out. suddenly the city government becomes aware that the levees are going to give way, and they're going to give way not in one place but two places. Anyway, the city government picks up and moves to another area on higher ground, but nothing is done to warn the people, of course, that they're going to soon be flooded. And when the levees give away, why, they give away in two different places, and then, of course, the water begins to rush in and flood the city. Now, it was known that this could happen. Apparently, the Army Corps of Engineers has big barges where they ordinarily, and cranes where they can ordinarily repair the levees. But for some reason or other, they can't get the barges and the cranes in. Other bridges there, but other, they can't raise the drawbridges because there's no electricity. And then the pumps give out, the electric pumps that are, you know, are keeping the city dry and getting rid of the water as it pours in. And suddenly everything goes from bad to worse. So the levees break, the pumps don't work, they can't move the cranes in, they can't get the information out. One tragedy after another. And, of course, no facilities are made at all for mass evacuation of the people who are there. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, and certainly then the helicopters are diverted back in to take the people off the roofs. Now, I just heard today FEMA workers saying we got some more people off the roofs. America, relax. We got thousands off. Ladies and gentlemen, this is 4 and 5 days after. People have been on roofs for 4 days and you couldn't get them off. I mean, I know this is an overwhelming task, but something is wrong here. But at any rate, they took these helicopters away to pull the people off the roof, and this left no effort at all to stop the water, of course, from continuing to come in and actually drown people to death.
Well, apparently the orders were given to use the helicopters to try to repair the levees, and somebody countered that order and said, we've got to get the people off the roof. The question is, where were the National Guard helicopters? Well, they're all over in Iraq. Where are the National Guard troops? Well, half of them are over in Iraq. So, you know, who's responsible for the fact that they're really, we're not the National Guard that is commissioned to protect America and protect Louisiana, the Louisiana National Guard? Almost half of their troops are overseas. Half, and most of their helicopters are, because most of the helicopters that were there, at least initially, were Coast Guard helicopters. And then when they got shot at, and this was the most incredible thing, you know, instead of firing back, why, they couldn't fire back because they're Coast Guard helicopters. They're not equipped to fire back. What about the military helicopters? Why, they're over in Iraq.
And, of course, big Huey helicopters could, you know, run shuttles and actually pull people out of here. And, of course, this would have made a big difference, too. And just run shuttles just to get people to dry land. I know that they couldn't get them to food and everything else, but they could have kept them from drowning, and many people did, and now we've seen some people just simply die because they can't get their medications or due to the heat. A lot of older people can't control this. But as we remember in 9/11 in New York, FEMA was there running, of course, drills on the streets of New York long before the event, and, of course, we now learn that in 2001, FEMA ranked the three major vulnerable hurricane strike points in the United States as New York City, Miami, and New Orleans. They had plans. They knew. They had been practicing. They knew that New Orleans was a vulnerable place. It wasn't like this caught them off guard. They actually had it on a top list. And they were talking about hurricanes. Why were they talking about hurricanes? And, of course, this gets us into, we're taking a big step now as we're trying to put some pieces of a puzzle together, because people on the Internet are asking, and by the way, I see at least an allegation here tonight made by more than 25 eyewitnesses that most of these are black people that live in the area. You see some houses there near the levees that broke, and that is, they're making the claim that FEMA sabotaged the levees. Now, forget that that's true or not tonight. What I want you to understand is the rumor is going around. Do you understand what a rumor could do? True or false? You could have tremendous outrage from it, whether it's true or not, and you could even have rioting in this country over these kind of things. So, this thing is declining faster, and I pray to God it doesn't spread, that the anger is taken out in some way of getting inept people out of government so they can move in a quick fashion to fix these problems, because what we see is a bunch of excuses, as if this is actually intentionally being allowed to happen.
Well, I think it's really it's amazing how effective the Internet is in bringing truth or bringing falsehood. And there's so many things up on the Internet you're not going to get through the regular media that are true. But they plant things there to manipulate our emotions as well. And separating truth from falsehood is what, well, we try to do. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening and commentator is Bill Sardi to give you his view of really what's going on and perhaps, clarify. So, Bill, pick up the story.
Well, here's where we start to make a big stretch, and I'm just trying to link things for our audience so they understand what's going on. There's a lot of discussion online and elsewhere where you see people saying, did the United States somehow, the military, did somebody, change the weather? Did they aim this hurricane, this monstrous hurricane, was it somehow it made to get worse? Did they control an earthquake, this hurricane, and then aim it at the direct place where it was supposed to go? And, of course, where this heads to, hang in there with me, because I didn't believe this 24 hours ago, but the question is, and we frequently see it in the sky, something called contrails, these kind of clouds that got airplanes seeding the atmosphere up there. Is this weather control, and have they learned how to do weather control, and would this have been aimed at the United States in order to get a giant distraction away from the president, and would this actually have occurred? Now, this may sound outrageous until you start to understand some of the facts involved in this. Weather control. Apparently the military has been involved in weather control technology for over 30 years. In fact, a patent issued in 1975 actually has a contrail generator. And that what they're saying is this, that contrails are simply not a way to change the weather. They're a way to tell us what is happening up there in the atmosphere. And that what you can do is take satellites and aim solar energy that's directed at the satellite and then concentrate it from the satellite on into a certain part of the globe in the atmosphere to heat a certain part of the atmosphere and then change the weather in that area. Now, you might need a number of satellites to do this. And then by doing that, you can see that where this is happening, where these thermal changes are taking place. This is actually something, an invisible, what they call scalar electromagnetic energy, and by laying these contrails up there in grids, you can see where this is being done. Now, the so-called rumor is that the Russians are directing this war, that there is some sort of a hidden war going on between us and Russia in weather wars, and we lay these up there and then figure out where they're attacking us and then try to counter it in some way. I think all of this is just a ruse.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Bill. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. And Bill is raising the question that's being raised in many places on the Internet about weather modification, planned weather modification, using weather as a weapon against other countries. And he's commenting that actually there's things on the Internet suggesting that the Russians are waging a weather war against us, or were waging a weather war against the Russians. And you may think that this is incredible. And really, I didn't even really want to accept any of this until Bill had pointed out that Zygmunt Brzezinski, in his book Between Two Ages, had written about the idea of the government ability to create storms and alter the weather. So when Bill, of course, mentioned the book, I had the book, I got it out. It was written in 1970 by one of the most powerful men in the world today. His name is Zygmunt Brzezinski. He's the architect of everything going on today. If you read his book, Between the Grand Chessboard, written in 1997. He anticipated the Islamic War. He anticipated the terrorist war. We even quote from him in our latest newsletter. But listen to what he says back in 1970, because I actually went to the book to get it out. And by the year 2018, he's writing now 50 years before this, technology will be made available to the leaders of the major nations, a variety of techniques for conducting secret warfare, of which only a bare minimum of the security forces need be appraised. One nation may attack a competitor covertly by bacteriological means, thoroughly weakening the population before taking over. Alternatively, techniques of weather modification could be employed to produce prolonged periods of drought or storm, thereby weakening a nation's capacity and forcing it to accept the demands of the competitor. Now, that's Zbigniew Brzezinski, today the most powerful, one of the three or four most powerful men who worked within the occult hierarchy associated with this ruling group who rule the world. And he's writing in 1970 in his book, Between Two Ages, America and the Technotronic Age, that was 35 years ago, writing about this technology that even then in 1970 beginning to become available. So pick up this incredible story, Bill.
Well, then this is followed by, of course, Secretary of Defense William Cohen, who was there during the Clinton administration, and he follows with another quotation which says, others are engaging in an echo type, meaning ecological type of terrorism, whereby they can alter the climate to set off earthquakes, volcanoes, remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So there are plenty of ingenious minds out there, and they're at work finding ways in which they can wreak terror upon other nations. So what he's talking about is weather wars, and he's saying there's somebody out there. It's kind of like this nebulous Osama bin Laden. There's an enemy there, and we need to prepare for it. But is it us with this weapon, and we're just trying to dig up an excuse to use it and practice with it? And of course, that's a bigger question that we'll try to get into here. But as I went on into the story and tried to dig into this, is there any example that comes to mind where we have actually used this weather technology? And what immediately came to my mind was something that stuck in my mind 2 or 3 years ago, back in the treaty between the United States and Syria. Between Israel and Syria. Now, the United States was involved in pushing the Israelis to sign a treaty with Syria. And, of course, they couldn't get them to budge. They didn't want to cooperate. And all this time, while the Israelis were stubbornly holding out, there was a drought that hit Israel. Well, they said it was the worst in a century. It was so bad, it was unbelievable. They didn't know where they could go with it. The very day that the Israelis capitulated to the U.S. demands and said that they would sign the treaty, the very next day, as the quote said in the papers, heavy rains accompanied by strong winds and thunderstorms swept parts of Israel, and of course, as it was reported in BBC News, almost 10 centimeters of rain fell in Tel Aviv in a matter of 24 hours. This was unbelievable. How could this be timed in such a way? And it stood out in my mind that this might be an example of the kind of weather manipulation that we're talking about. And it was just like we see here in New Orleans, it just rang a bell to me that this might have been it. And, of course, understand now how the Christian community gets drug into this. Because if there are people behind weather manipulation in such terrible scenarios as New Orleans, their out is that this was the hand of God. Preachers are claiming this is a sinful land, that we deserve God's judgment for all of our sin. And they're getting up, and of course, I know they're going to cite Matthew 24, where Jesus talks about a great tribulation. And of course, it's saying that not since the beginning of the world to this time, nor ever there shall there be a tribulation like this. And Jesus is talking about this day of tribulation, and of course, that this will be coming. And of course, maybe God's allowing all this to happen. After all, God allows evil to occur until he comes to establish his new kingdom, but as the Bible explains. But nonetheless, this is what's going on. And I wonder if the Christians, I'm just asking a question, aren't being kind of culled into this, just drawn into this as a way of actually being misled, because God is a perfect alibi. Let's blame it on God, and no one's guessing. But man, now, if you go down to anybody today and you say, you know what? What do you think God's responsible for? Do you think he's the big guy behind weather and earthquakes? Well, now man has the technology, if you read this strongly, has the technology to alter and create earthquakes and create storms. And of course, this is considered in the past the hand of God. So as much as we may sound we're out on a limb here, now let me pull it back in for you. A 1977 CIA report in Saturday Review hinted that the U.S. government already had the power to massively manipulate the weather. A company in Florida today called Dynamat, you can go to their website, dynamat.com, and they actually sell products you can drop from airplanes. They've demonstrated them, called Dyno Drought and Dyno Storm, and they can actually stop storms or actually create a, you know, interrupt droughts and get rain to come. A Russian company actually says they can deliver weather made to order. And so this is not something new. Finally, the U.S. Air Force paper says that we should capitalize on emerging technologies of weather modification. And finally, just last year, a doctor named Ross N. Hoffman is envisioning designing a worldwide central command post to control the world's weather through the use of contrails and a fleet of solar reflectors orbiting the Earth. This is where the connection is made with contrails. This is right out in open discussions. This is what is actually occurring. This was on BBC, British Broadcasting Television. And, of course, this is the kind of thing that we now see incredibly being linked in with the events that we see in New Orleans. Is it true? Can we put all, connect all the dots? No, I don't think we can. But I think we can embellish on some facts here that you may not be aware of. I mean, New Scientist magazine just a couple of years ago on the front cover had their front cover said perfect weather, how they're going to engineer the weather in the world. Do you notice that the North Pole ice cap is receding unbelievably? Is this being manipulated by man? I mean, we have to ask these questions. There's so many things, of course, occurring, but mankind apparently has the ability to control weather. And, of course, we could go on into this tonight. They have this HAARP technology, H-A-A-R-P, where they're able to send waves through the Earth that, of course, simply mimic or trigger earthquakes. So you see that the hand of God, the way we consider that, that God is in control of the weather and God is in control of earthquakes, well, maybe man stuck his hand where he shouldn't.
Well, maybe man is trying to play God.
And certainly this is true. And, of course, you know, as I was going online and I was reading, you know, some things, and you see people writing online and saying that, you know, this had to be God's hand and this kind of thing, and then to be stunned, to really realize that maybe this could be, or at least we have the capability, to do this kind of thing with man-made technology and make it look like, of course, that God was somehow involved in it. And, of course, this is the ultimate. And, you know, Jesus, if we go on in those passages in Matthew 24, Jesus goes on to say, yes, there'll be this time of terrible tribulation. But then he goes on to say that if any man shall say unto you, lo, Christ is here or there, believe it not, for there will be false Christs and false prophets. And then he goes on to say, and they shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch, if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Of course, the Christians. And of course, you know, we bring this question up. Are we being deceived? Well, I think we need to ask. Even the Apostle Paul said, be not naive, don't be deceived, and to be as smart as the serpent. So, you know, we need to look at these kind of events going on in the world today. Are they intentionally making this a shocking event? And why? Are they terrorizing us? And, of course, why is all this seemingly being allowed to happen? There are things that still go unexplained in this whole thing. They only evacuated people on one side of the interstate. There weren't buses, trains, planes used to evacuate, as we brought up earlier. Do levees break after a storm is over? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. You know, we see other things that don't make sense. Why aren't they looting banks and they're only looting retail stores? There's no police there. This makes no sense. So why aren't they going where the money is? I mean, there's odd things that don't make sense there. And, of course, we don't see all of the allegations of shootings and gang rapes and so on, but we don't see a lot of evidence, though I did see someone today, but this seemed to be kind of a stage thing where some man came up in a car, the people came out with guns, and then he ran off because they knew a TV reporter was in the area. And as I watched it today, I said this seemed to be kind of staged. And so I wasn't exactly sure whether we were being manipulated there or not, but it's so easy for all of us to get sucked into something and not sure exactly what we're seeing. By the way, where are the Superdome officials? How come we don't see anybody from the Civic Center or the Superdome? There's no officials available. Maybe they drowned in this thing event. Maybe it's just unfair for me to ask, but it does seem kind of odd here. And, of course, this whole event, when we start to put it together, understand, do we see the Muslims celebrating? Is there any great joy in their heart for any of this? No. So, you know, I mean, are there terrorists behind this? Well, I don't know. I can't say that there are terrorists behind this, but there certainly is question among Americans whether this was brought on by our own government. And of course, some of these descriptions I'm giving you, that in fact we have technology to manipulate weather, apparently this is coming out in the open because there are private enterprises that now have technology to sell this on the open market to farmers and so on. So this is how it's kind of getting uncovered. But the interesting thing, it explains the contrails. Now, there are chemtrails. That's the laying of chemicals. This is simply laying things into the atmosphere like barium and other types of metals in order to reflect heat and so on. So that's what the contrails are. And they want to lay this smoke pattern up there because they want to detect these areas in the atmosphere that may be a little warmer, and therefore it helps to start a weather pattern or to stop a weather pattern. Now,
I think perhaps for our listeners, Bill, I should comment that HAARP, which is the High Altitude Auroral Research Project up in Canada, has the ability to beam a billion watts of energy up into the ionosphere and heat the ionosphere, and they can do that in various areas. And when you begin to heat the ionosphere, you begin then to alter the weather, because, of course, hot air causes the things to rise, and then the air rushes in, and of course, this is how you can create a storm front. And there are these not only in Alaska, but several places throughout the world. And you can then begin to bounce these beams off the ionosphere to certain specific areas in our society. And remember what Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote when he was talking about these things, when he said, only a bare minimum of security forces need be appraised. In other words, he's saying, we're going to keep this secret from even most of our military. So if any of you would like to see what Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote back in 1970, in his book Between Two Ages, if you have a copy, it's page 57. If you'd like a copy of the pages, we'll be glad to send them to you. That's Between Two Ages by Brzezinski. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And 30 years ago, one of the most powerful men in the United States, a man who is knowingly or unknowingly under the control of the spiritual forces that rule the world, in my estimation, was writing about weather modification and how they would be able to modify the weather, but they were going to keep it secret even from many of the people in the military. Only a bare number of people need to be appraised of what's going on. So this is an incredible thing to contemplate, but I do remember one thing, Bill, and that is that storm was coming. It was coming almost straight in from the Caribbean towards Florida, and then when it went across Florida, it suddenly made a right turn. I mean, it didn't keep going straight. It's gone straight. It would have gone over into the Yucatan Peninsula or into Mexico, but suddenly it veered its course and began heading north.
Well, some of the people that are monitoring this weather manipulation thing say that they have seen whole storms either make a complete right turn or make a 360-degree loop, which goes unexplained in the weather patterns. Because understand, we have jet streams and the Earth is moving around, so things go in kind of that way, and you just can't get things to move in a right turn like this kind of thing. Understand that, you know, when you look at this historically, the United States conducted some projects. Now, those two projects were called Project Cirrus and Project Storm Fury, and they were conducted in 1967 through 71. What were they? Hurricane manipulation experiments. So this was begun way back 30 years ago. As I say, the first patent for a kind of a contrail device that would lay these kind of clouds from an airplane was filed for in 1975. There have been two other patents filed for chemtrail devices and so on since then. So we know these are true. The point is maybe we have confirmation that at least what these contrails are has something to do with weather manipulation.
Well, we live in basically an evil world, and I think it's about time people realize that very little as it appears to be. Bill, do you want to get do you want to put your website out? I realize this has nothing to do with what we've been talking about, but if people would like to get in touch with you.
Well, of course, we did enjoy sharing all this information tonight. You know, we do have a health website at knowledgeofhealth.com, so we welcome you to visit that. Support Radio Liberty. We do appreciate the invitation to share with everybody this evening.
Okay, we're going to just keep you for about 3 minutes more. We'll be right back. That's knowledgeofhealth.com. Knowledgeofhealth.com. Well, Bill, this is an amazing story. You've done an amazing amount of research, and I'm indebted to you for that quotation from Brzezinski, which we were able to look up and verify, and it really is there. 35 years ago, Zygmunt Brzezinski, after he'd written the book Between Two Ages, was tapped by the wealthiest man, two wealthiest men in the world, and that was David Rockefeller, to form the Trilateral Commission. And Zygmunt Brzezinski then became one of the leaders of this whole internationalist one-world movement to, of course, change society. Certainly, the research he was talking about in 1970 has continued. And I know that they have amazing capabilities today, and I have no question at all they can change the weather. What are your parting thoughts for us?
Well, I'm amazed now that we're, of course, left the Salvation Army. If you're going to give money to somebody, that's my best bet at the moment. They're in place and feeding lots of people. And of course, I see people handing newscasters $1,000 at a time on the street and various things. How do you know that if that's cash money, where it's going to go, what you're doing? $72 million has been donated so far. The Red Cross is begging for money and, of course, has a kind of a history of taking and putting in their own pocket first. So, you know, probably if anybody's going to help, then these poor people really need to be removed from the situation. This is the only real way to help them. And they need to be taken out of there. And once that happens, now we have military bases. It's the only place I know that's all set up with chow lines, tents, and the clothing. I don't know why we're not moving all these people to military bases. We've got plenty of them. We say we want to close down, open them back up, and get it going. So, you know, this is a terrible thing. Government is not reacting properly, and if America doesn't catch on, well, it's our fault.
Now, we know, though, that FEMA has been making plans for mass, you know, evacuations and certainly putting mass communities into these various camps. And the question is, why aren't they using them? There are many of them in the South that would be available. Is it they don't want the American people to know that they're there, that they are ready staffed and ready to take large numbers of refugees? Lots of unanswered questions out there. Well, Bill, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and I appreciate your bidding to take on this subject on such short notice.
You bet.
And I think we all feel very, very deeply about what's going on.
I think every American wonders, is this the country that they grew up in or the country they understood it to be?
And, of course, it's very obvious to me the oil companies are using this as an opportunity to raise here on the West Coast.
Every president previous has frozen the price of oil, Bush has taken no action to do this, and anybody goes back, I'm not that old, and I can remember presidents doing.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're going to have to let Bill Sardi go. Thanks very much, Bill, and bye-bye.
Thank you, and good night.
Bye-bye. And certainly we see the price of oil going up here on the West Coast, but we don't get our oil from the Gulf. The oil is not carted across the country. There is no more shortage of oil in California today than there was a week ago, and yet, of course, the prices have gone through the roof. This is all, so much of this is being manipulated, and our emotions are being manipulated, and my plea to you is try to look at things clearly. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being waged on a political, ideological, cultural, and educational, financial battlefield, and just certainly try to keep a clear perspective of the fact that God is sovereign, and certainly God can intervene. He can stop storms. He can create storms, or perhaps there was another cause for this storm. We don't know, but it's fascinating to contemplate how this all fits together. For those of you who have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, let me suggest that you seriously consider getting it to try to understand the true spiritual nature of the forces that are aligned against us. If any of you would like to read about the occult hierarchy that rules the world, why, we'll be glad to send you a copy of my Occult Hierarchy Part 2 newsletter. It was the June newsletter. It's available on the Internet. But if you don't have access to the Internet, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of the Occult Hierarchy newsletter. We do hope that you'll go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And you can, of course, listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet, directly or indirectly, 3 hours on Radio Liberty, 1 hour on GCNLive.com, and 1 hour on AmericanNewsNet.com. That's AmericanNewsNet.com, early in the morning, GCNLive.com, and RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, after you've finished doing that, you can listen to the archive programs. You'll get a lot of education, and our hope is that you'll come to understand the true nature of the battle we're engaged in, and that you'll help us educate others as we reach out across America 5 hours a day, and then with our weekend program, try and make people understand that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king, that we're not going to get the truth from the regular media, that the information will be so confused and contradictory articles intensely done so that you can't see things clearly. And then up on the Internet, some wonderful, wonderful information, and some information that is frankly planted to confuse the entire issue. If you honestly believe that there's a struggle between communism and capitalism, why, of course, you are going along with this age-old concept. We have two political forces, the right, the left, the Democrats, the Republicans, the liberals, the conservatives. And this is all designed to confuse you so that you really don't understand that there is, frankly, a conspiracy against God. And when you understand there's a conspiracy against God, you will understand why they took God out of our schools and prayer out of our schools and the Bible and the Ten Commandments. Look up Jeremiah 11:9. Look up Ezekiel 22:25. Look up the second Psalm. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. And then I want to remind you that back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, back of the schemes of men and demons is a higher, hidden hand. Warp and woof are heaven created, often patterns often good and wise, oft perplexing by earthly standards, but good and wise in heavenly eyes. Though the cause of evil prospers, yet his truth alone is strong. Though a portion be the scaffold, and upon the throne be wrong, but that scaffold sways the future, for in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. We'll be right back. Dale. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, at 464-8295. But please do not make any calls unless we specifically ask for them. We have with us this evening David Ayoub, and we're going to be talking about the issue of vaccination, and specifically about the fact that they have been poisoning our children by putting mercury in the vaccines. And this has been known for a long period of time. Thimerosal was banned from putting on the skin many, many years ago, several decades ago, because it was so toxic that you couldn't put this thimerosal product, which they called at that time methylate, on the skin. They banned it from putting on the skin, and they put it in the vaccines that they gave to our children. Well, David, how did you get involved in this subject?
Well, Dr. Stan, I'm a radiologist, and about a few months before 9/11, I went part-time. I actually was an interventional radiologist for about 10 years, and I needed to give my knees a little relax from wearing lead aprons all day. And after 9/11, I really had a moment to pause, and I realized shortly after those events that the world maybe wasn't exactly what I thought it was.
Welcome to the club.
Thank you. And I have to thank you for being a large part of my reality check, and I've been a dedicated listener to you since then. So you've played a great role in my rebirth, both my Christian rebirth and my political rebirth. So thank you. For one reason or another, I started looking into controversial health issues, and when I came across issues about mercury and vaccines, I was just floored. I had done research in neurodevelopmental sciences when I was an undergraduate and in medical school, and I just was stunned that they would even consider putting mercury in vaccines. And I just was so overwhelmed at what I was reading, I decided I had to get on a plane and go to one of these meetings and see for myself. And I went to a DAN conference about 2.5 years ago in Washington, D.C., which is the Defeat Autism Now organization by Bernie Rimlin, who's been your guest, I think, several times. And who should I hear the very first conference I walk into is David and Mark Geyer. And you don't hear them speak and not be affected. So it was a dramatic revelation to me about the conspiracy going on at the CDC and so forth.
Now, for our listeners out there who do not know who Dr. Mark and David are, Dr. Mark Geyer is a geneticist. He's an MD, and he's a scientist. He's been involved in actually studying the genetics and its influence on the brain, on the body, for many, many years. His son is working on his PhD thesis, but they work together as a team. And they really started, investigating vaccines, but they were pro-vaccine. They thought it was impossible that vaccines could be hurting people, but they got into it further and further. Why said they came to the sudden horrifying conclusion that the mercury in the childhood vaccines was damaging the minds of our children. So pick up the story there, David.
Well, basically, I was so motivated by their story, I decided I had to learn. Now, I'm not a treating physician, so I wasn't in the role to try to treat these kids by getting mercury out of their systems. So I decided to try to learn as much of the science as possible. And I did that, and actually it was on the speaker circuit at the Autism One conference. And my interest was talking about the science and politics of vaccine-induced autism. But this spring...
Hold that stuff right there, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening. Dr. David... how do you pronounce your last name?
Ayub.
Ayub, okay, fine. Dr. David Ayub is, for those of you who don't know what an interventional radiologist is, he's the fellow who puts those catheters into you and puts the, you know, various dyes and things into certain specific orifices and things of that sort. And actually, did you use that for introducing radioactive isotopes and things like that?
Well, I didn't. I did some therapy, mostly chemotherapy through catheters, but I didn't implant radioactive devices. Mostly the radiation therapists were doing those kind of procedures.
Okay, fine. Well, go ahead. But anyway, David was actually on a speaker's tour, and he was talking about the background of the mercury in the vaccines. Pick up the story.
Well, I was planning for my second annual conference here in Chicago this spring at the Autism One conference, and I was going to talk about the usual science and the usual politics, which I think many speakers on your program have discussed in the past. And I came across an article in Byron Child magazine by Lisa Reagan, and in that I basically changed my initial views. And this is basically what I wanted to do, and what I presented in Chicago was how thimerosal is being used in vaccines, not necessarily as many people believe that it was basically put in accidentally and it's been pulled out without with full knowledge of the governing agencies, but they didn't want to admit that this had damaged children. But it's my belief now, having seen what was written by Lisa Reagan with regards to an organization called Gavi, which is a global alliance for vaccination and immunization, and this is a Bill Gates organization, how the program in America for adding thimerosal to the vaccines was intimately tied to a global vaccine agenda and may have ties to a population control program that I think you've had speakers on in the past, the events in Nigeria and the Philippines and so forth with anti-population, anti-fertility vaccines. So I really changed my focus and my research this spring, and I think this is probably, in my best estimates, really what's going on. And I wanted to try to explain this. It's a bit of a complicated, entangling story, but I think it's fascinating materials that I've discovered and I'd like to share with you.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to just wait just a minute till we bring other stations back on board. But it is the most difficult thing for me, and I think for most people, to believe that anybody would be so crass and inhuman that they'd want to hurt children until you realize that people who want abortion, we've killed almost 40 million children here in America since Roe versus Wade.
Exactly.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here this evening, and our guest this evening, David Ayud, and we're talking about what he had discovered as he began reading some things about some of the people on the other side and what they are writing about this worldwide vaccination program. And as you begin to analyze the worldwide vaccination program, you will find out that today in the world there are 2 billion people who've acquired hepatitis B. Now, it's very rare in the United States outside of homosexuals, prostitutes, IV drug users. A very small percentage of our population has the disease, but throughout the underdeveloped world, 2 billion people have this disease. How did they get it? Well, you have to, now they're not all actively infected. Many of them are infected and then they are able to overcome that. They become carriers. About 375 million people in the world are chronic carriers, chronically infected with hepatitis B, and many of them will die of cirrhosis and of liver cancer. How did they get it? Well, every child, according to the World Health Organization, almost every child in the underdeveloped world has had hepatitis B. How did they get it? Well, from mothers to children, from child to child, from infected transfusions or infected vaccine needles, infected needles, dirty needles, or from sexual contact. Well, first of all, children don't have sexual contact. Only about 15% of the mothers are infected. The chance of getting it child to child is almost nil. How many children in third world countries are going to have infected transfusions? So what they're really getting it from is dirty needles, when they use for vaccines. Now, you would think when they can spend so much money for vaccines, because it's expensive to do vaccinations in third world countries and to provide the people to do it and provide the vaccines, but they cannot provide a penny for a clean needle. There's something wrong with this story, don't you think? Well, you were talking about that literally every child in the underdeveloped world, according to the World Health Organization, has had hepatitis B, and almost all of them got it from infected needles. How could that have happened unintentionally? So pick up the story there, David.
Well, before I trip upon the global vaccine agenda, let me just make a few comments that kind of get everybody, all the listeners, up to speed and on the same level of where we stand with thimerosal as a cause of autism. First of all, there's certainly enormous amounts of science, I believe, that confirms thimerosal or ethylmercury causes autism. There's no question, but most pediatricians don't know a single paper because it's not showing up in their journal. It's not showing up in JAMA, New England Journal, or Pediatrics. It's showing up in a number of very reputable peer-reviewed journals. They just don't get to see these journals. There is some science that refutes this, and it's published in JAMA, Pediatrics, New England Journal, and so forth. It's being promoted by the Institute of Medicine, by the AMA, by the AAP as great science, when in fact these papers are garbage science, funded by the industry. Most of these studies are so fatally flawed that it's just the fact that somebody would even comment that these papers are good is conspiratorial in and of itself. So obviously you've got to wait. You've got science that says thimerosal doesn't cause autism. You have science that says that it doesn't. And there must be a conspiracy, and you have to look no further than a couple of major transcripts that were obtained through Freedom of Information Act, and you'll find your conspiracy. That, of course, is the Simpson-Wood transcript, which I'm sure you've had discussed on your program.
But I want you to discuss it. We may very well have people out there who don't know what the Simpson-Wood meeting was.
The Simpson-Wood meeting was a meeting in Norcross, Georgia, at a resort called the Simpson-Wood Resort, where officials, and this occurred in the summer of 2000, where officials from the CDC's Vaccine Safety Data Link researchers, Thomas Verstraeten, members of World Health, CDC, FDA, American Academy of Pediatrics, and other private vaccine manufacturers met and discuss the preliminary results of the Vaccine Safety Data Link, which was an HMO database looking at thimerosal in relation to the incidence of autism and developmental disorders. And in that, it must have been probably a 100-page-plus document, these researchers, these physicians, clearly knew that the data that was being presented showed that thimerosal and vaccine cause autism. You will not see any of that report on major networks or major newspapers. That document was obtained, again, I think, from Lucien Clark or the Safe Minds Organization. Clearly, the people at the CDC knew that the thimerosal was causing autism.
And I think for our listeners, the databases were obtained from large HMOs that use different types of vaccines, some vaccines with thimerosal and some without, so they could compare very accurately the two groups. And a massive increase in autism in the group with thimerosal, and there was no question that thimerosal was directly related that autism was directly related to thimerosal in the vaccines. The conclusion of the Simpson-Wood meeting was there is a causal relationship, but we can't let the people know. We can't let the public know.
That's right. Then the second major document obtained through Freedom of Information Act efforts was that of the Institute of Medicine Vaccine Safety Review Committee. This is a committee that the CDC asked the IOM to put together. That met between January 12, 2001, and the spring of 2004.
IOM is the Institute of Medicine.
Institute of Medicine, right. And that transcript was the discussion from people on that committee that were looking at thimerosal. Before they looked at a single piece of information, they had discussed that it was the CDC's wishes for them not to find a link between thimerosal and autism, that they would not go there, they would not discuss causality, they would not suggest a causality. At the most, that they would conclude, and they're predicting what they were going to find 3 years before they made their final conclusions. So their intent, the Institute of Medicine's intent, was to whitewash this.
In other words, they were not honest scientists at all. They were prostitutes. They were doing what they were being paid for or encouraged to do, and concealing from the American people that thimerosal, the vaccines, the childhood vaccines, were destroying the minds of our children. And for those of you people who do not know, 1 in 6 American children has either a neurodevelopmental abnormality or a behavioral abnormality. Those are the CDC's own figures, and it varies from autism to Asperger's disease or to ADD or ADHD or a learning disability or a speech disability. But 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality. We've destroyed a whole generation of our youth.
That's right. So basically, I think any legitimate scientist, government official, health official knows the facts. They know that thimerosal has caused autism. There's an obvious cover-up. So the question is, and the question I asked is, why? Why was it put in? I mean, we didn't learn with Mad Hatter's disease over a century ago. We didn't learn from Pink's disease in the mid-1900s when we had mercury poisoning in infants who were using mercury-laced teething powder. How on earth does mercury show up time and time again, yet the healthcare officials act shocked that it could even be implicated as a poison? In 1999, when the Public Health Service and the AAP and CDC issued a warning saying that they were taking thimerosal out of the vaccines or reducing the dosages, it appeared that basically they were backpedaling, not wanting to admit that this was the problem, but they were doing the right thing. They were taking it out. But there were a handful of things that really made me pause, that this maybe was more than just protection of industry, which a lot of people think. The first thing was in May of 2004, the American Academy of Pediatrics announced that they were going to now recommend influenza vaccine, which contains thimerosal, to 6 to 23-month-old children. Now, that was two steps forward, one step back, in my opinion. The vaccine that they're recommending contains 12.5 mics of thimerosal, and on a per-weight basis, based on the EPA standards, children now are going to be overdosed somewhere between 11 and 16 times the day they get the flu vaccine. But I think the thing that really tipped me off was the fact that Chiron, which is one of the flu vaccine manufacturers, in the fall of 2004 announced that their vaccine supply to the United States was basically wiped out because it got contaminated with the Serratia bacteria. That vaccine contained thimerosal. That's a failure of what thimerosal is supposed to do, and that's prevent bacterial overgrowth in the vaccine. So if the U.S. health officials ever needed an excuse to take the mercury out and be able to tell the public that, hey, we're not taking that because of the implications to autism, we're going to take it out because we know it's not effective. In fact, all studies that have been done going back to the early 1940s show that thimerosal is a terrible, weak, ineffective preservative. There are dozens of references to that. So that really made me curious. Why on earth wouldn't they take advantage of this opportunity? Why are they adding it now to the influenza vaccine? And furthermore, the American College of OB-GYN is starting to promote this for vaccination in pregnancy.
Now, of course, if the mother takes it, then, of course, the child will get that because the mercury will go across into the child's brain as well, won't it?
It's actually not only goes into the brain, but it's concentrated in the fetal tissue. There's a higher concentration in the umbilical cord than it is in the mother's serum.
Why would you give the mother, mercury that would go to the child's brain, where we're telling mothers, don't eat fish, because we're from the government, and we want to warn you that the mercury in the fish can damage your child. And yet, of course, we're going to go ahead and give the mother a shot of mercury that'll do exactly the same thing. Doesn't make sense. Well, when we get back, we're going to let David, of course, explore this and tell you what conclusion he's come to. Because I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it was the hardest thing for me as I began looking at what was going on to finally come to the conclusion, accept the fact that there really are evil and wicked people in the world. Well, David, pick up the story there.
Okay, so I think you have to ask yourself, what is the motivation, what is the intent of these manufacturers to put thimerosal in vaccines? And I came up with two potentials. Number one, is it being done for profit? And this is basically classic Machiavellianism. In other words, Eli Lilly, who owns a patent on thimerosal, also makes made, I think, something like $600 million last year off Strattera, which is their anti or their ADD-ADHD drug. There's no way to prove for me that the pharmaceutical industry is trying to create disease and then profit by the treatment. It just plays out that it's supported by the fact that they do make money with disease. They don't make money with health. The other possibility, of course, is intent to harm. And another word for that, of course, is genocide. Population reduction, if you will. And I'm going to leave briefly here. I want to leave the thimerosal topic, but I want to finish up with that and come full circle. But I want to talk a little bit about the population control agenda and what has been used in vaccines as far as anti-fertility efforts. There are a lot, and you've covered this numerous times on your programs, but in my opinion, there are two really key documents with regards to America's role in population control. And that first one is the Rockefeller Commission Report, and this was a 1969, Richard Nixon had proposed the formation of a commission to study the effects of U.S. Population growth. And it was headed by none other than J.D. Rockefeller III. And to quote a couple comments from that report, which was published on March 27, 1972, basically, the first part of the report said that there's, after they've studied it, there's no economic advantage for the U.S. to grow anymore, and in fact, further growth might provide more problems, and we have to come up with an answer and curb population growth in the United States immediately. But this is the key quote. In any case, no generation needs to know the ultimate goal or the final means, only the direction to which they will be found. So what you have here is precedent that J.D. Rockefeller, in a report to the president, population control is a very serious problem, and the American people don't have to be told how we're going to deal with this problem. The second very, very important report, and I think you probably are familiar with this, Dr. Stan, and that is 2 years later, Henry Kissinger issued a report to the National Security Council, known as the National Security Study Memorandum 200, or NSSM 200. It was entitled Implications of Worldwide Population Growth for U.S. Security and Overseas Interests. The reason this is so important, because what I'm going to talk about, what their conclusions of this study, their goals, how they were going to address world population growth, has remarkable similarities to the agenda of an organization known as the Global Alliance for Vaccination and Immunization, which we'll talk about in a second. And so what I'm preparing you for is I believe NSSM 200, 25 years later, is being implicated through a global vaccine alliance.
And it's being implemented by the...
It's being implemented today.
Right. And I believe you're absolutely right. Incidentally, for our listeners, we do offer that NSSM. It is available through Radio Liberty. But go ahead and tell the story.
The conclusion of this document that Kissinger wrote was that there was unprecedented growth rates in the world, particularly in the lesser developed countries. It was going to have a major impact in U.S. imports and therefore would threaten...
Hold that thought right there, David. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, our guest this evening, David Aubin. We're talking about... we're talking about mercury and vaccines, but David said that as he began to look into this further and further, he began to realize that there perhaps was another agenda, and certainly one of them might be but profit. After all, Eli Lilly makes thimerosal that's put in the vaccines. Eli Lilly actually makes a great deal of money off some of their medications, which treat the tragic results of mercury toxicity, such as ADD, ADHD. But we can't necessarily say that's the real purpose behind what's going on. But the second thing was population control. And he talked about two reports One was the Rockefeller Commission report that was issued back in 1972 that talked about the necessity of limiting the population in the United States. The other was the National Security Study Memorandum Report issued by Henry Kissinger in 1974. And Kissinger, of course, has always worked very closely with the Rockefellers. And tell us a little bit about NSSM 200, because this is really one of the keys to understanding what's happening in the world today.
Right. The Kissinger Report explicitly laid out a detailed strategy for the United States to aggressively promote population control in the developing nations. And they even specifically identify 13 nations by name. This document has never been renounced, as far as I know. It's been amended a couple of times, apparently, since its adoption. The measures that they wish to do this is through reproductive health, which is really a buzzword for abortion and condom use, sexual education. They state that they want to improve health, women's equality, promotion of daycare, things like that. And I look at this, and it's sort of interesting. You might think that some of the biggest social movements we've seen in the last 30 years, such as women's rights, equal rights for women and so forth, and abortion, sex education, has come from this document, and not really from women's liberation, so to speak. So it's an extremely, powerful document. The method that they were going to do was basically stated this. They were going to assist lesser developed countries' governments. Their activities were not to appear coercive. And it's interesting, if they weren't coercive, why would anyone think they would appear coercive? They would emphasize individual rights and emphasis on the mass media. Their goals were replacement fertility, and that is 2.1 children per fertile woman. Replacement fertility first in the developing countries by 1985, and then the lesser developed countries by the year 2000. So in other words, they were going to recommend that Europe and America reduce their population growth first, followed by the lesser developed countries, and that's exactly what the growth curves show today. Now, let me flip quickly over and talk about Gavi, because what I'm going to essentially talk about this organization sounds exactly like the NSSM 200 agenda. Gavi was an organization formed by Bill Gates in 1999, and this actually came at a time when America's vaccine industry and healthcare government was under attack by Dan Burton, congressman from Indiana, through the House Committee on Government Reform, Subcommittee on Human Rights and Wellness, when they did a three-year study. They started a three-year study, which ultimately concluded that there was institutional malfeasance amongst the CDC and FDA, and this was an epidemic caused by thimerosal and preventable by proper actions not taken by these regulatory agencies. Gavi was launched in 1999 by a staggering $754 million by the Bill Gates Foundation. He has subsequently given now over $2 billion with a goal of $12 to $15 billion. This is an organization that exclusively provides immunization to the 70th poorest nations in the world. In all aspects, they do research, they deliver, they implement. They provide, quote, government rewards to these third world country governments, and they provide industry incentives. Who makes up Gavi? Gavi is made up by World Health Organization, UNICEF, World Bank, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, vaccine industry in developing and industrial countries, various non-government organizations, and guess who? The Rockefeller Foundation. Now, what's interesting about that list, this is the exact same players that Kissinger said would have to be called upon to carry out the NSSM 200. The exact same people: World Bank, World Health, UNICEF, UN Population Fund, Rockefellers. So, first of all, we have two agencies wanting to do seemingly opposite things. Gavi wants to promote health through vaccines. NSSM 200 wants to reduce population. Those seem like diametrically opposed agendas.
But perhaps they're not, and we'll talk more about that when we get back here in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, people need to understand, I believe, that there is a genocidal agenda. It's well on its way today to fulfillment. and people are dying unnecessarily. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And David, pick up this story. Tell us once again what GAVI stands for, though.
The Global Alliance for Vaccination and Immunization, an enormous international organization organizing essentially the majority of the third world vaccination policies being carried out today.
Okay, GAVI, G-A-V-I. So go ahead.
The NSFM 200 also lists target nations. I said there were 13 target nations, and virtually every one of these nations is on GAVI's list to vaccinate. So not only do you have the same players carrying out the agenda of NSFM and GAVI, but you have the same recipients, the same basically third world undeveloped countries. And one more oddity, and I bet you haven't heard this before. When I was researching some of the early research papers on thimerosal safety, I discovered that really the first clinical study done with thimerosal by Casey Smithburn in 19 papers published in early 1940s, I found his research papers on the Rockefeller Archive Center. He was a Rockefeller scientist. So here you have a connection between Rockefeller and thimerosal, through basically the first scientists who tested thimerosal in humans. And it perhaps is not a coincidence that the first researcher to discover that a virus can cause cancer was also a Rockefeller scientist, and his name is Peyton Rouse. That was discovered in 1911. And of course, you've talked about on your show in the past about the controversy of SV40 virus contaminating the polio vaccine. Two notorious vaccine agents are linked to researchers under the umbrella of the Rockefeller Institute.
All right. Well, I'm not in the least bit surprised about it, although I did not know that the Rockefeller scientists had done research on thimerosal. What did they find? Did they talk at all about its toxicity? Did they talk about its impact on the reproductive system?
Yes. And in fact, they injected 22 meningitis patients, and all of them died.
That's how they came to the conclusion it was safe.
And the reason they came to that conclusion, because the wording of the paper said this: when thimerosal left the IV tubing and entered the vein, there was no observed adverse reaction. They didn't talk about follow-up at all.
Well, they didn't have a chance to follow up because all of the people died.
That's right.
I mean, this is the most incredible sort of science, but this is really what we're up against. We're going to be back here in just a moment here, ready to explore this even further. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is David Ayoub, and we're talking about what he has discovered as he's begun to look into what's going on behind the scenes. And he found out, of course, the same organizations that were to be mobilized to push Henry Kissinger's program for population control, NSSM 200, were the same groups of people who were involved with something called GAVI, which is the Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization, which is funded by Bill Gates. And that's organizations like the World Health Organization, UNICEF, United Nations Population Fund, the World Bank, the Gates Foundation, the NGOs, and the Rockefeller Foundation. So pick up the story there.
Well, this organization, which is, again, the target fundraising for this organization is $12 to $15 billion, and Bill Gates has given over $2 billion of his own money to this. So this is serious, serious business for even somebody as wealthy as Bill Gates. And who is Bill Gates, and exactly why is he so interested in improving the health in third world nations? You shouldn't question that, because it's a noble, obviously, effort and noble cause. But when I looked into his history just a little bit, I found extensive ties to population control, family planning, and Planned Parenthood, and abortion funding. He'd given, and this is just a partial list, he gave $1.7 million to the United Nations Population Fund in 98, $10 million to a collaborative research on reproductive health, to a collaborative involving World Bank, World Health, in the UN Population Fund again. He gave $2.2 billion in 1999 to the Population Fund and $1.7 million to International Planned Parenthood. And I got this quote from the Seattle newspaper, Seattle PI Reporter, on March 21st, 2001. And quote, an interest in family planning brought the Gateses to the door of the Seattle nonprofit firm called Program for Appropriate Technology and Health, or PATH. PATH has spent years working on population, reproductive health, and vaccine safety issues to the third world. So everywhere I searched in some of his philanthropy seemed to be tied not necessarily directly all to health through vaccination, but really more population control and reproductive health. So it seemed like there was, again, a diametrically opposed agenda based on his involvement in these organizations. So the obvious next question I had is, if Gavi is vaccinating the third world, 70 nations, with billions of dollars of money, is there something about the vaccines that could have a dual purpose? One, is the vaccine, assuming that the vaccines are effective, are they improving health, but are they delivering something that will reduce fertility? And that would include, of course, thimerosal. Well, I just simply Googled it, on birth control vaccines, and I found hundreds of scientific papers on birth control vaccines. It isn't even debatable, Dr. Stan. It is a scientific fact. There is extensive research. I have before me a book entitled Birth Control Vaccines, published in 1995. So it is a fact that number of centers, in fact, there are five major centers that have done research on anti-fertility vaccines, and that's the National Institute of Immunology in New Delhi, the Special Program of Research, Development, and Research Training in Human Reproduction of the World Health Organization in Geneva, the Population Council, the Contraceptive Research and Development Program, also called CONRAD, in Norfolk, Virginia, and unfortunately, one of the NIH agencies, the National Institute of Child Health and Development in Bethesda, and many smaller research centers scattered throughout the world developing vaccines. These vaccines go by the name of anti-fertility vaccines or birth control vaccines or simply immunocontraception. The research started in the early 1970s, and guess what? That was about the exact same time that the NSSM 200 report was issued. Now, Judy Richter has written an extensive book on the vaccination against book entitled Vaccination Against Pregnancy, Miracle or Menace. She's a German pharmacist and medical biologist that really kind of summarizes the extensive amount of research that's gone into this. So it is absolutely a scientific fact that they exist. What do they target exactly? Well, they target many things, some more effectively than others, as you can imagine. Some of these vaccines target the hypothalamus, gonadotropin-releasing hormone. And this might rattle some memories of medical school and some of your basic endocrinology. They target FSH and LH, which are hormones from the pituitary gland, which affect gonadal function. The vaccines can target sperm directly or testicular tissue. They can target ovarian tissue. And the most commonly used one is, however, human chorionogonadotropic hormone, or HCG, which is, of course, the byproduct of the early conception.
That apparently is what they used in both Kenya and in the Philippines.
That's right. So there is no question there are anti-fertility vaccines. Now, is there any evidence, taking one step further again, is there any evidence that what has been apparently only published phase one studies, has this been implemented? Well, when I started looking a little closer in the literature, I mean, this is just a stunning discovery in Lancet magazine, which is a British journal, a well-respected journal, published on Saturday, June 11th, 1988. This is a study called Phase 1, Clinical Trial of World Health Organization Birth Control Pill. And it was funded by the World Health Organization. And they basically were successful at linking HCG with the tetanus vaccine. Now, why did they link it with the tetanus vaccine? Well, they say that they need to have an antigen to stimulate the immune system to attack the HCG, and they claim in a relatively small phase one trial it was successful. Their conclusion was it would work, and a woman who received it wouldn't even know she missed a period. So it could be given, if it was given occultly without her knowledge, she wouldn't even know that, that anything was wrong. Now here's the twist in this. 1 week earlier in Lancet, 1 week earlier, there was a letter written in a section entitled International Correspondence, and it was a letter, author of the letter wasn't included, it was a letter titled this, Nigeria, a well-meaning but controversial population policy. And the article goes on to largely state at the beginning that there's strong warnings being given from unnamed population agencies for Nigeria to lower their rate of population growth, and the usual kind of banter about they're going to run out of food and water and there's going to be pollution if they don't. But here's the last last paragraph of this article states this, a quote, during the recent national immunization campaign in some villages, now this is a vaccination for childhood diseases and tetanus toxoid for pregnant women. Some villages, the women escaped and hid in the bushes thinking that they were going to be given injections to stop them having children. The population policy needs to be properly elucidated and communicated. So it's stunning. 1 week before they publish a successful phase one trial, you have allegations now in Nigeria that the women are being vaccinated, and there's a tetanus program. And in fact, there is to this day a widespread tetanus program being targeted to women. Now, who gets tetanus? You know, as an orthopedic surgeon, you know that this answer, Dr. Stan, it's not many women are at high risk for tetanus. Two out of three cases of tetanus, even worldwide, are in men that are the workers and are exposed to, you know, cuts and scratches in the fields and so forth. So it's absolutely stunning that these reports occurred. Now, there's even more convincing evidence that the tetanus vaccine has been laced with HCG. There was a woman in the Philippines who runs a pro-life organization. In March of 1994, she started writing some of the national organizations in assistance. I actually met with Sister Pilar Versosa early this summer in Chicago when she was visiting the United States. Her story has been told on a BBC report. It didn't air in the United States, of course, but it aired in Europe. It's been written up in several of the pro-life organizations on the Internet. Basically, what she told me is in 1994, their Department of Health started a very unusual program of tetanus to women of reproductive age. And what was particularly unusual is that the women were given not just one shot, not two shots. They were given between three and five shots over a 12-month period. And as you know here, the booster for tetanus lasts about, 10 years or so?
Right, right. So obviously she knew that they were using these tetanus immunizations for another purpose, and they were lying to the women.
Absolutely. And Sister Pilar is a very intelligent woman. Her mother was a researcher with Linus Pauling. So she's an incredibly sharp woman. And these vials were sent to India and tested, and they were found, three out of four vials contained HCG. And we know that HCG given in experimental animals, studies have shown if HCG is given during the neonatal period, it causes atrophy of the ovarian tissue in adulthood. It sterilizes them. And in fact, these women who got this, an estimated 3.4 million women got vaccinated during this campaign in the Philippines, had spontaneous abortions, vaginal bleeding, and the duration of this isn't even known. Similar reports have been reported in Mexico, in Pro Vida de Mexico, which is a pro-life organization there. It's been reported out of Nicaragua.
And certainly I've talked to doctors from Kenya that told me exactly the same story.
Well, I didn't have those reports, but the similar stories are being told with the oral polio vaccine in Nigeria, and it's pretty much the same story. Extensive documentation, a huge campaign to eliminate polio, and of course what they found was not only just anti-fertility agents. This is reported in the Kaduna, which is one of the northern states in Nigeria, the newspaper March 6, 2004, Weekly Trust. Dr. Dadi Ahmed, who is a Kano-based medical doctor, a very reputable doctor apparently, had the vaccines tested. It contained HIV, or the AIDS virus. It contained other unnamed dangerous materials, and estradiol, which would be a sterilizing agent if given to young men. There's a third link with anti-vaccines, which I don't have any evidence that it's actually going on, but this is really compelling, and this is the TB program. There is a very large international efforts to eliminate so-called epidemic of neonatal tetanus. And I'm not sure, have you ever seen a case of neonatal tetanus in the United States?
I never have. Certainly, supposedly, this occurs in third world countries because they don't have sterile conditions when they cut the umbilical cord, and you can get a tetanus infection. It's quite rare, but it occurs in third world countries, not in the United States.
Right. Well, I couldn't substantiate the numbers. They're reporting, you know, tens of millions of cases worldwide, but actually I found in Central and South America, one of their health organizations lists the number of cases of neonatal tetanus, very small numbers in Central and South America. So like everything else, I believe probably what you and I have been hearing is largely an overblown numbers in order to promote vaccination with the tetanus. Now, there are studies they have been able to, and this was published in the journal Endocrinology, they have linked the TPD vaccine with gonadotropin releasing hormone. So they have an anti-fertility vaccine using TB. Now here's what's really, really interesting. I was doing some research on an organization called Stop TB Partnership, which is a big program. And most of these programs, whether it's polio or TB or hepatitis B, they're really under the same group, same organizations. They just go under different titles and different leaderships, but are basically talking about the Gavi Alliance. There was a memo, World Health Organization printed a memo, and it said this, that there was a young woman who was found murdered in Harare, Zimbabwe, and she was working on the TB program there. It was called the Stop TB program. But they also mentioned what her previous job was. Her previous job was in Geneva in an organization called Bertarelli Foundation involving infertility research. Now, you're a physician, Dr. Stanley. Can you think how close the specialty of reproduction and the specialty of infectious disease is?
Not very close.
Not very close at all.
Unless maybe they're somehow going to use the effort to stop communicable disease to push infertility.
Exactly, exactly. And it doesn't stop there. One of the 19 members of the Governing Council of the Institute of Medicine is Dr. Helene Gale. Dr. Helene Gale directs the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but her expertise is, get this, TB and reproductive health. She's part of the TB and Reproductive Health Program of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Again, now you have a tie to the Institute of Medicine, which whitewashed the research on thimerosal and vaccines. And I know in the United States, the healthcare agencies are making a big, big push for employees to get TB skin tests, which is the PPD antigen. They're also pushing this to preschoolers. Now, I wrote a paper, and it's been posted on the Internet, about the myth of the TB skin test for healthcare workers. And, in fact, I could find no science to it whatsoever. It's a terrible science. The policies they're having it makes sense, perhaps, in big cities, big inner-city hospitals, where they have a lot of people of foreign nationality. But it really makes no sense to do this for the healthy healthcare worker. So I'm afraid that people are getting set up here via the TB skin testing program and in fertility.
In what way are you thinking they're going to put something in the skin test or in the treatment for it?
Part of the TB skin test because they've linked, they're using the PPD, and the PPD is a purified protein derivative used in the TB skin test.
Right.
So we now have a link between PPD and anti-fertility, and a huge organization that's trying to wipe out neonatal tetanus in the world, so they can tuberculosis in the world, which of course does exist predominantly because of the HIV populations in Africa. So it's just another potential for abuse, and I have heard no reports where they've discovered that being used used in practice, but I think it's something that has to be looked out for.
Well, I think that when you're dealing with something this devious, when you're dealing with something this organized, this pervasive, you know, you have to be a little suspicious. We got to be careful, you know, linking it until we have the scientific proof.
Right.
But I don't blame you for being very, very concerned. And I appreciate all the research you've done.
The last really part, we're getting back to thimerosal. We know that the World Health Organization made a very strong statement in 2001 that they were going to promote the use of thimerosal in their international vaccine program. What about thimerosal? Why is it being used? Is it an anti-fertility agent? Of course, the fact that it causes autism would be somewhat of an anti-fertility agent, but thimerosal itself, based on published reports, is directly a cause of infertility in males and in females.
Oh, isn't that an interesting thing? I've always suspected that. Hey, we're going to have to take a quick break here. So here again, we find the thimerosal. Remember, they're going to take it out of childhood vaccines for American children, but we're going to leave it in the vaccines for all the rest of the world. Why is that? Well, Dr. Stan here and our guest David Ehud, and we're talking about thimerosal, and David is simply pointing out that there is a anti-fertility component to thimerosal. Have there been studies done on thimerosal from that point of view specifically?
Yes, there has, and the sources, you'd be surprised. In fact, there's probably too many to mention, but I'll mention a few. Well, out of California, Proposition 65, and also the National Toxicology Program. Now, Proposition 65 is a California EPA, I believe. Extensive documentation that thimerosal causes intrauterine death and perinatal death. But the specific research is actually cited, believe it or not, by the FDA and the CDC on their websites. They have a list, and this is taken from the FDA, a list of the 8 papers which prove thimerosal is safe. One of those papers, published by Batts in the Journal of Pharmacy and Pharmacology in 1989, actually showed when thimerosal is applied to the sheep trachea, it causes complete arrest of ciliary function. Now, you know, cilia are very important in sperm. They drive the sperm, cause sperm, responsible for motility of sperm, but they're also responsible for normal function of the fallopian tube. So it was, and this is what the FDA, right under your nose, cites as a study of safety and effectiveness of thimerosal. It gets worse. Another paper they use that cites as a safety study by Gassett in the Archives of Ophthalmology in 1975, called Teratogenicities of Ophthalmic Drugs. He found when thimerosal was applied to the eyes of rabbits, pregnant rabbits, they found, and the good news is, that it wasn't causing birth defects. The bad news is it wasn't causing birth defects, Dr. Stan, because the rabbits died. The fetuses were dying and being reabsorbed prenatally. A 36-fold higher incidence of fetal demise.
And this was what they used to prove that it was safe?
It's on the FDA's website today. One of the 8 articles they cite is thimerosal safety. Of course, they don't think anyone's going to actually look at the articles. They just want to have a nice, neat list of safety references. This is what they've shown us. There are clinical studies with mercury, many studies. It's in Gerhard in Human Reproduction in 98 found that the more amalgams that a woman had, the higher her blood levels of mercury, but also the higher incidence of infertility. And that was a autoimmune infertility. And probably, you know, I think the best evidence is, why don't we look at the Pink's disease children. Now, Pink's disease, as I said earlier...
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here in just a moment to wrap this program up. Well, David has actually cited a number of... and I hope many of you out there in the listening audience will want to get a copy of this tape. Fascinating information. A lot of things I didn't know. Go to the FDA webpage, and they list all the these articles that tell you how safe the thimerosal is. And if you read the articles, it's just the opposite. You know, go ahead. We were talking about Pink's disease. Pink's disease was what... it was a disease that was created when they had this sort of a talcum powder or something laced with mercury, and they would put that on the gums and put that on the child.
Exactly, and that occurred not so much in the United States. It was mostly Australia and Britain. It was for teething. It had calomel, which was an inorganic form of mercury. But about 1 out of 500 of those children would develop basically mercury poisoning. And this went on for, for before 1900, and finally, I think it was finally removed in the late 1950s, 1960s. But the follow-up on these children, and many of them did recover as adults from the neurological toxicities, but they had all sorts of systemic problems, and not dissimilar to what we see in autistic children. But Ann Dolly wrote an article, The Rise and Fall of Pink Disease, and stated that there was a very high incidence of infertility in the adult males. And in fact, I got a database from an organization in Australia. It was a Pink Disease support group, the largest known support group. They did an extensive survey of their Pink Disease survivors and found both in women and men about a threefold higher incidence of infertility and a much higher incidence of abortions.
David, I wish we could go on for hours, and we will continue this program some other time, but please get your website out there. People can get in touch with you, and then we've got to wrap up the program.
Well, I don't have a website, but I have all the documentation on CD-ROM. I've published a CD-ROM called The Science and Politics of Vaccine-Induced Autism. And if people want to email me, I will send you copies of my reference materials and all my my research.
And get that telephone number off right now, or email right now.
It's raypoke, RAYPOKE, at mac.com. That's MAC.com.
One more time.
Raypoke, RAYPOKE, at mac.com.
God bless you. Thank you for all the work you've done. I'll be talking to you off the air.
God bless you.
Good night.
Again.
All right, fine. Well, that was a fascinating, fascinating program, and I'm just so glad that here's a physician who's taken the time to do the research. There's no question at all. They know what they're doing, and they're destroying the lives of people. 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality. They've taken the mercury out of the vaccines given here in the United States, except for, well, of course, the influenza vaccine, but they've left it in for the children of the rest of the world. We're dealing with organized evil. If you want more information, go to our website, radioliberty.com. If you'd like to get material from Radio Liberty, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have all sorts of information on autism, on mercury, and you need to get this information to protect yourself and protect your family. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty. We're on the front lines of this battle. And, of course, again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. And our website, radioliberty.com. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.